Greetings, Be Aware people. Welcome to Be Aware Nation, a corporation for evolution. We invite you to interact with us as we explore, develop, and synthesize awareness throughout layered living. We're evolutionizing the way people think, feel, and deal by merging medias into minds that matter. Being aware is a state to put your mind in. Join us as we consciously work to adapt the frameworks, models, and structures that make up all of our present-day operating systems and ownership models. We're here to fully explore the realm of where the ethereal becomes the material. Be Aware Nation is guided by the wisdom of the human spirit, utilizing the laws of science.
Good afternoon and greetings, Be Aware people.
Greetings to you all. This is Sally.
And this is Barry.
And here we are at Be Aware Nation.
Welcome. We're here today and continuing on our little exploration of what awareness really means in terms of applying ourselves to the kinds of situations that we encounter in life. How do we make being aware a functional part of our everyday experience? And as much as we are faced with an unending continual challenge of what seems to be a continual changing atmosphere and environment where we live those lives, that challenge seems to increase on a daily basis. So we're really looking today to really want to talk about how we really place ourselves in that process and how we understand ourselves in the midst of that process. And so we're really looking today to describe and analyze what is the compression that everyone seems to be feeling and experiencing.
Right. How the universal compression is creating an identity crisis amongst our interpretations of self. Now, self within ourselves, as we've talked about in the past, for those of you who haven't heard this, we believe that we have many people within our soul that are driving the cars. And the important part is who is driving the car at any given time for whatever your goal is. And we also want to talk about the larger picture today, though, about the self in terms of our relationship to our culture, to the global family, and how that all plays out within what is the compression.
It's really quite an interesting time in human history, quite frankly. The nature of the changes are such that it's challenging everyone at every level. There doesn't seem to be anyone left out. No favored child in this process. The universal intention seems to be quite stark. Whatever one interprets this goings on to be, whether it be Armageddon, cleansing,
shift.
We're shifting.
Just a basic shift.
Natural evolutionary cyclic processes. What it appears to represent in the larger scheme and in reflective nature is that it is indeed going on at a time when the human consciousness landscape likewise is undergoing the same type of tumult, same type of upending, ability to understand itself in its place. And
I think that, you know, one of the key ingredients to self's relationship to the compression is whether people are awake or aware. Intuitively, people sense that their life, the formula that we've depended on for life is changing. And I'm obviously speaking from more of a Western point of view, but you know, we do have to understand that the world at large, I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but something like 50% of the world's population have never made a phone call.
Yeah, it's significant.
So, I mean,
in the era in which we find ourselves, where, you know, so much of our lives seem to hinge on technology and its capacity to alter our lives' processes and how the human developmental arc has been responsive to that technological development.
And what will it do to, as we've already seen, in a remote village somewhere where suddenly there's a cell phone and the farmer or the fisherman is now able to sell their product without having to go miles with rudimentary transportation because they have access, the town has access to maybe one or two cell phones. And so what does that do? Are we saying that that town was not going through an evolutionary change in their consciousness as individual cells because they didn't have technology? Of course not. So that's something we can overlook and forget, that when we talk about consciousness, of course it's our own personal environmental interpretation, because where you live and where you interact, and it's all relative. But when we look at the broader picture of the universal intention and what is the compression, we have to always remind ourselves to look at the larger picture. And I think that's, you know, when we say we all feel some degree, again, I don't remember the numbers, but, you know, recent surveys, you know, like 50-something percent of the people through all age brackets, through all walks of life, are feeling completely overwhelmed and stressed out, as if they're barely able to just simply make it from one point A to point B. So the idea of including consciousness in that formula seems a luxury. And even here, at this point in time, when the human consciousness is rising to such a level of awareness, we are still tied to that machinery of the daily world. And so how do we translate and find the time and recognize that to contemplate on the larger scale in the universal ether about what all this means, this convergence means, that is something that must be done. You know, we're not going to survive as a species unless we take some time within the chaos to reflect and communicate what our perceptions are and how we think as individuals we can impact the larger picture in a positive manner.
It's really a good way to say it. It's so true, to really try to come to terms with a platform to engage what's going on in a fundamentally, functionally constructive way, when most people are coming from life situations or environments that weren't focused on this level of transformative change. They weren't prepared to deal with the level of integrated complexity that's currently being thrust at us on an everyday level. And so you really have to step back and, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, there's a particular energy force in the room, but as soon as you say, identify it as a particular energy force, you're led to want to identify that energy force and its source and what it's comprised of, so that you can understand more deeply what its implications are and what its impact might be. And so all along those same lines, here we are, as a species, having to deal with a point in human evolution where our human developmental arc has brought us to a place that we are ill prepared to be. We simply have not developed the kind of skill sets necessary to be confronting the type of technological sophistication and wizardry that have begun to dominate our everyday experience. And even though there are half of the people on the globe that haven't touched these devices' influence have certainly touched them. And they will continue to touch them. And what it is incumbent upon all of us is to find ways in which, as a human species, we're all better off as a result. And so that's what really guides our fundamental operating principle of merging medias into minds that matter. It really stems from our own interpretation.
Let's say this. Why, this is a good point to ask this question. Why do we need to merge medias into minds that matter?
Well, good. That's a good question. Because the significance of where we are today in terms of understanding media, again, this is another
mm-hmm.
point
mm-hmm.
in the process where
is something, you know, like a huge wave of energy, media, advertising. It's all the same thing. It's messaging, the science of messaging. And so we feel as if that's an aspect where we're being overwhelmed, overrun, that somebody else's message is supposed to be our message. And that's not always true.
Well, or, you know, that's even presupposing a particular level of consciousness and awareness and engagement. Unfortunately, at the speed things are evolving and expanding, you know, an awful lot of our human functionality, the basic operating systems, the platforms, the models that we use to engage the way in which we live, how we do commerce of all forms with each other, the basis of human commerce on all levels, the reason we're so far away from the original principle of what human commerce meant to be, the enrichment of each other's humanity, is because the layering of technology without that intention always being comprised at the core of those efforts has led us to a point where it's covered up. And people's everyday experiences are happening now so quickly as a result of the sophistication of technology. So the concept of media, how do we describe media in universal terms? Clearly, our interpretation is that everything that exists in the universe is a love-filled, goodness, living asset. Media really, literally, is every single thing in the universe. Every single thing that exists is some form of media.
Meaning content of some form, messaging of some form, communication of some form.
Some substance of the universal form that is made up of a messaging component in its very nature.
Yeah.
And that's what enables all of us to link to those raw pieces of operating material, to begin to craft them as our language links, to develop them into the communication carriers we mean to convey our interpretive thoughts and ideas and concepts of the living experience that we have. That's very sophisticated. And unfortunately, the level of understanding that goes into being in self, having an experience, and interpreting that experience in an understanding way takes a particular amount of attention.
And commitment.
Well, and yes. And today, what's at risk is that attention. And so media has over time become a method of communication at its core, because that's the basic raw operating material of it. So it naturally and organically becomes the communication vehicles. And so we have become a communication society based on the fundamentals of our species. We are communication oriented species. We
like to engage. We like to group.
We exist to reflect off of one another, to define self. That's a communication carrier. That's how we reach our engagement. And so that takes a particular type of communication effort, some type of understanding. And clearly, over time, our ability to develop as human beings has lagged our understanding of what it takes to propel our human development. It appears as if, for some odd reason, what we don't know, we are able to figure out to develop our process in a more refined capacity before we're actually capable of understanding how to live that way.
Give an example.
Every single thing that exists. The unfortunate conundrum today that people don't understand is the significance of how media has transformed our understanding of self. The actual communication vehicles, then, let's use those, the sophistication of where we are communication-wise, the ether communications that have always been present in our experience as human beings is what gets translated in the communication stream. So our need as humans to identify self with other has always been about finding some way to cause that communication to flow. And so that's really the core of why people have such a penchant for networking. That socialization tool, that way in which we reach out. And so the whole concept of networking has a very, very fundamental core purpose. And yet people don't take the time to consider what happens.
But the interesting thing is that if you would examine your ecosystem, if you will, as an individual, you see that you're already networked. And so it's almost the same contention as media and networking, saying that there are these things outside ourselves that are coming into us without our permission or without our control, and we haven't had any discernment of what those are, which is very true on many levels. But it's also not true in the way that we are already networked, and so it's as if you're saying, well, that's too difficult to network on many levels. No, some people truly believe that networking, I'm not
right,
a good networker.
I don't have the talent to do that. Right.
But if you would examine your own life and the people in it, you're already networked.
Right.
So I think one of the key things is to always recognize at any point in time, whether you're overwhelmed, stressed out, inspired, thrilled, you know, over the moon, happy, you know, you are where you are, and you don't really have to reinvent yourself to the degree that it's some arduosity or some mystery formula that prevents you from having that reflection. Because if you look at it as if I am who I am, and really what it is about is uncovering who you are, peeling away the onion layers, and really being who you are, so that you will have, you already have everything you need. So media, networking, everything outside yourself is just a gift. A gift, you know, it's like you're creating your own movie, your own drama, your own story. You are the creator. And so that is why, to bring it back to merging medias into minds that matter, it's your media. You are media. Media is me. And so it's about that creativity and discernment and awareness, and that all happens simultaneously. It's happening anyway. Sometimes we're just so disengaged from our own basic core that that's when we become disconnected.
Well, that's when really the functionality of selves, the separation of selves, the functionality of selves, the nature of people understanding that their interpretations of selves, these layers of selves, that actually are busy going on all at once. They're all having an experience all the time, and they're all going on at the same time. And so one of the things that people have to really recognize about the whole concept of this idea that media is me I am the process, I am the source, I am the self, the very nature of interpretation. Again, it's like networking, to be networked for the purpose of information to flow, so that there is a process of developmentally processing self. And in the process of developing self, you end up understanding those layers in a way that you're able to synthesize into functional operation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what merging medias into a mind that matters means, is taking those disparate interpretations of self and expressing them in a more unified, synthesized manner that is reflective of a common ethos, a common core, a common declaration of self, so that in the world in which we live, as these complex, chaotic scenarios continue to try to grab our attention, we're the ones that are in charge of our minds so that we know what medias to engage with to develop the type of living experience we're after. It's a very significant world in which we live, because the benefits and opportunities are so great that they so outstrip the woes and sorrows and challenges that we face, that human quality of creativity that the universe has provided us to deal with the layer of complexity that we now face, to deal with the understanding of our layered selves, to mirror the complexity of the layers that are compressing. That's what compression is, the universal process showing us how much our human consciousness can respond and reflect that same layered compression. And so as humans, when we expand our consciousness, there's a reason, there's a process, there's a form and a function, and that needs to reflect what's busy going on.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So this is a good point in time to share with what we did yesterday and the day before. We were very excited that we attended an event here in Los Angeles called Empower Change Summit. And this was put on by the American Democracy Institute. And we had the pleasure of interviewing the founder and director of the institute, John Hart, who worked in the Clinton administration during Clinton's presidency. And he and a few others decided to create this institute for the sole purpose of educating and empowering a new generation of Americans that will expand the circle of opportunity for equality and justice, not only to inspire young people, but also to touch people who aren't necessarily afforded the opportunities to participate in the democratic process. And he's going to be a guest on our show sometime in the near future. His schedule didn't permit it for today, but he is very excited about what the Institute is doing. And this Empower Change was for bring young people. They've had several or many events in different cities, D.C., Philadelphia, a lot of East Coast cities, Denver, and this was the Los Angeles event. And there were some great speakers, and it closed out with about a 45-minute talk by President Bill Clinton, which was very interesting. The whole day was very interesting because the young people that attended were so diverse, and there were high school students, college students, and it was a great mix, and there were workshops going on, And basically, some of the workshops were ecology, economy, and equity, transforming education. Another one was empower change in your community. Another one was entrepreneurial leadership. One of the most popular ones was making change your career. Young people really have created a whole new way of using their time. You know, it used to be that, for instance, spring break was full of parties down here in Florida and over there. But now young people are using their spring break to do volunteer work. This whole idea of volunteer vacations, where instead of taking the family to Disneyland, you take the family to some kind of wonderful experience where they're working with the environment, etc. So these young people were so switched on, and these workshops were just so alive and full of their energy. And this making change your career was the most popular because they want to find a way to have some economic equity in this new global economy, yet they will not sacrifice their commitment to affecting change, be it just within their small community or on all different kinds of layers and levels to, you know, a basic global experience. So it was extremely
exciting. It was really exciting to really see so many young people that are really, again, you know, one of the fundamentals of what we're on about here with awareness is how does awareness translate into tangible functionality? And again, more succinctly and specifically in functional terms, what is awareness? You know, defining it in other terms, in functional terms, in actionable terms. It's really necessary, and that's why we're so on about this whole issue of describing the way in which we are living now outside of the boundaries and frameworks of any of our past experiences, so that we can come to terms with some new form, some new framework, some new understanding of how to live in this new world.
And you said a little while ago that, you know, these times what is the compression? The compression can feel the way it does, but yet it's also affording us, because of its pressure, to be creative. And so this is one of the most exciting times, especially for people who are awake, no matter what your age, and just by virtue of being a young person today, to have access to this technology and to this concept of the greater good, of a civil society.
Well, it's so unique, too, because really, listen, in truth, one of the things that has propelled us as humans to be here today is the significant contribution that those who have always been aware,
of course,
have made to constructing,
you know,
the kind of frameworks that have been necessary to give humans the ways to move forward, the ways to craft the forms and functions out of this creative outburst.
Yeah.
And so that's really what the significance of intuition really means. The knowing that comes before the factual understanding, and how that knowing gets translated into our life experiences. And there is a particular sophistication, there is a particular way of learning to refine the process of understanding how to use that knowing, how to apply intuition and make awareness a living, breathing application of the way we live our lives.
For instance, President Clinton had just come from Seattle, where he had been in a week-long summit with the mayors from the major cities in, well, not major cities, but
all the major cities, 1,100 cities
in America. And the level of commitment that the mayors themselves made to deal with their own community's participation in
Well, I mean, the significance of Clinton's presentation yesterday was really speaking to the level of how awareness is really starting to bubble up and really be seen in segments of society. And
well, like, for instance, one thing he said is that the President of the United States has never issued a driver's license. That's a state function. And just breaking down these functions into our community, into our cities, into our, you know, states, and how these mayors had made a commitment to global warming, they weren't going to wait for the federal government. They were doing things in their own cities that were affecting tremendous change. And so they were getting together as a group, as mayors, to exchange and inspire each other about how to affect change. And that's what awareness is in action.
And it's really significant when you see somebody, you know, truly the nature of his presence in being able to inspire these young people, inspire these mayors, inspire people around the globe. As he said, I've been to 92 countries since I've left office. You know, the significance of what my learning curve has been about.
Being outside of that governmental mode and restrictive framework, what he's been able to do after being a president, he said it's just, you know, like, talk about evolution and speeding up time and things compressing. It's as if he said he's been, you know, shot out of a rocket. And what he was telling the young people was, you know, because we were talking to some, while right before he started speaking, some high school students, and they had some, you know, critical, good criticisms of the event itself and the workshops and what they felt it was lacking and how they would like to see it better. And yet, because they were high school students, they didn't feel that they could go back to their schools and necessarily report some of the criticisms. They felt they had to report the rah-rah positive side. And so we had a very lively discussion about how important it was for them to express their whole perspective. And it was really great when President Clinton, you know, encouraged that as well in his talk to them, to not be afraid, that fear is such a, you know, all the levels of fear, societal fear, individual fear, you know, fear of a catastrophe, the world is coming to an end. Well, it's critical. The world is fragile, and we do have to pay attention to what's going on in our world. We can't say global warming is not happening. It is happening. I don't know how many species we're losing per day. But so it requires, like he said, Al Gore was ridiculed and ridiculed and ridiculed over and over again. And this is a man who thought one minute he was president, and the next minute he's giving a concession speech to George Bush. So he didn't fall into pieces. He got outside the governmental framework, and he began to take that governmental experience and put it into the private sector, and he's now got the Nobel Peace Prize because of his efforts, along with other scientists, of course, and people who contributed to that effort to win that prestigious award and raise the awareness that it wasn't a joke.
And that's really, truly, the significance of what Clinton had to say was based on that one basic thesis, that the will to apply the awareness was really the crux of his whole pitch. And that because, and clearly, we all know he's a smart guy, and he's got a broad perspective, and as he says now, being out in the world, and this is what was also so not just significant but touching, and to him as well, that the humanity that he's been able to experience by expanding his awareness of so many people in so many different types of situations, and instead of understanding those situations or plights vis-a-vis a particular policy, he now has a very first-hand, visceral experience of being able to put his hands on these people and be in these situations physically, materially, and share the experience directly with these people. And that's what he said is so powerful and potent about what's going on today and the significance of who we are as a people and what our opportunity is, that this level of shared experience that we are capable of having. He says there's a particular level of sophistication and advancement in human history that I'm even able to travel to 92 countries. So the fact that I can bring that understanding back to you and share with you a qualified synthesis of my own understanding of what's going on in those 92 countries and how what's going on there impacts and causes your lives to have a benefit or a dilemma based on how we respond in whole, in total, as being aware that we are together, we are one. The significance of his understanding and his commitment to that sentiment of, look, we're all in this together, and everybody's issues are the same, and we have to somehow or another grab a hold of this human dynamic that does reach out to have a shared experience, that does reach out to enrich each other's humanity, that does reach out to try to cause each other to get a leg up. And that's what he's capable of doing now in his work, and that's what he's reaching out to inspire others to do. And to see these young people, this is what I wanted to say, to see them already present with a particular intuitive readiness, an intuitive understanding that that level of awareness is already an engageable factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's already, and Clinton's big word, and he used it over and over and over and over again, and he says throughout my travels, and this is why he says, you have to commit now as humans. Government is not going to do it. They simply do not have the capacity to bring the type of awareness to bear and cause the systems to alter and change in time. We have to do it from the outside. We have to do it as people. And we have to do it with the type of commitment to the conviction that our wills are capable of sustaining. That's where sustainability comes from,
exactly.
Is applying that conviction and really being able to use that will to actualize. His term for it all day long in his whole speech was operationalize, because he says all of these policies are fine. All of this commitment to raise money is fine. Even all of these brand new creative ideas are fine. What we have to do is figure out a way to operationalize it all. He concurs, the systems, frameworks, and models that exist are inefficient and ineffective for the type of altering change that we're undergoing. And we have to take command of doing what we can to use this bursting creative juice that we saw in mm-hmm. high school students and college students. What do I do? What do I do now? I have so much desire, so much intention, so much capacity, so much understanding. How do I apply it? And so his admonition to them was to conceive of their process and plan for life in operationalizing terms. What can I do? Literally,
mm-hmm.
How can I go about doing something today that puts me in a place of causing myself to feel as though I'm participating in the change that I personally feel?
And a really great story, we didn't get to see him in person, but he spoke via videotape, and he was one of the partners in the event. It's called Tom's. And this guy, Tom, He's a young guy. He had an idea that he just wanted to deliver. He had traveled to Argentina to a remote village, and he just wanted to deliver 250 pairs of shoes to the children in that village who had never worn shoes in their life. And because they didn't have shoes, many of them couldn't walk to school, and many of them also had, you know, foot issues, foot disease. And so that's all his goal was, 250 shoes to this village. Well, it's been 17 months later, and I don't do numbers well, details well. I don't think I'd be a good politician spewing all the facts and figures. But in 17 months, I think he's been to 40 countries.
Thousands and thousands thousands of shoes.
And not just him going, but people directly. They don't. You go and you buy a shoe as a donation, which is then that shoe is given to a child. They don't.
No. No, you buy the shoes, you pay for the shoes,
right.
$40 a pair of shoes, and they then take...
Right, the organization, they don't send the shoes to the village. They go personally.
But you walk out of whatever store, you still have your pair of shoes.
Oh, it's sure.
Yeah. It's a tremendous concept, and really... What their philosophy is that where the real reward comes from is truly them personally delivering the shoes.
And that you know exactly where your donation is going. You know, it's not administrative costs. I mean, obviously there's some involved, but that pair of shoes is literally going on that child's foot.
Well, and it proves out the commitment, the conviction.
Of one person.
The social entrepreneurialism, you know, and that's where an awful lot of these young people were sort of hung up. And that's where Clinton himself was really trying to do what he could to try to illustrate, and here we are, were on a college campus, university campus, but the significance of what he was saying was, look, you got to get outside these frameworks. You got to get outside these institutional ways of thinking, because the significance of sometimes how these institutions send you out into the world is not meant for you to necessarily grab a hold of your most passionate idea and believe that you can use that today and transform the world. And yet, that's one of the things that take us back to this whole significance of compression and what this whole next side of, you know, what we're looking for in terms of saying, how do we respond to these compressing times? What are we doing that is causing us to be equal to our experience? How do we take advantage of looking at being aware that, okay, if media is the currency of our time, we certainly want to be in command of our currency. Those are our resources. We want to know how to apply them to our process, to securitize our experience, protect us, to nurture us, to develop us. And so one of the ways in which this whole idea of compression is preparing us to cause us to expand our consciousness. And instead of looking at all of the negative consequences of the impending complexity that looks as if we're out of control of our experience, we simply have to shift so minorly to understand and recognize that the significance of where we are today, what we face in terms of what technology has enabled, the significance of how media is able to flow, how networked we are, the concept of being willing to be networked. Again, we hearken back to the language that we use to interpret our experiences. And so the ways in which we ourselves are aware of our experiences. Again, as we say, being aware is a state to put your mind in. Your mind. So that your media knows where to follow. the way in which media is dispensed and delivered today is so complex. How do you differentiate, delineate, distinguish, discriminate which functions of life you want to participate with? The significance of what it takes to interpret this expanding universal evolutionizing way of presenting our experience looks as if it's compressing everything about it. Yet what it's doing within it is expanding our capacities to interpret it, to perceive it, to understand it. That's the concept of networking, to be networked so that the information can flow. What is the purpose of the information flowing? So that we have access to the information to live with, to use, to translate it into the knowledge that we acquire by living in accordance with the properties and qualities that make our lives meaningful. That's what wisdom is. And so how we interpret the concept of media today, the concept of complexity, the concept of compression, is vitally important.
And that's where critical thinking comes in, the discernment, the, you know, not only is it imperative that we examine as an observer our own thoughts and what kind of thoughts, you know, renegade thoughts running to and fro, what thoughts do we really want to grab a hold of and embrace and enact? And what thoughts do we want to dispose of because they are not in keeping with our best interest? And so that discernment then begins with our own dialogue, our own chatter, and how we examine that and refine it, and the study of selves, if you will, through our own intuition. You know, humanity has evolved through intuition, and our awareness, our intuition, they're critical. They are within us. We have to reawaken them, and we have to refine that skill set because it's been numbed out by a myriad of things in our world.
Truly, the significance of where we are and how to simplify understanding. You know, the nature of everybody's experience, everybody's lives. Everybody has moments in their lives where they are so fully present in the moment. It is as if every single thing is absolutely electrified. And yet there are other moments where you're literally driving the car down the freeway and then all of a sudden you come back and you go, oh, whoa, hello. I mean, you're so far out of your experiential, your present experiential zone, which, of course, we all call reality. But, how to come to terms with and understand and synthesize these selves in a unified fashion that gives us some semblance of balance and meaning amongst these challenging, compressing times.
So it's really important to take note of your own thoughts, your own media, if you will, and then to really, you know, just as a basic exercise, to examine the media and what media you are allowing to come in, and how does that mirror what it is you are thinking you're asking for, what you're saying I don't want, but why is it here? You know, what are you reflecting back onto yourself by the absorption of the media that you're letting in?
And that's exactly where the same thing we've been doing since the beginning of time. That media that we're reflecting, again, is the original ether communications that the universe is using to inform our experiences. The universe expands, the cosmic energy transmutes into material matter, somehow our consciousness is present in that form that causes our beings to exist in this in live in form as human beings, and we have experiences that are brought to bear through these ether communications that we know as our intuition, as our knowing. What is that fundamental knowing, that sense of ESP, that sense of, you know, however one interprets an intuitional self, that therefore as soon as you recognize a relationship with your knowingness, then you have a relationship with your ability to identify and communicate amongst your interpretations of self. And that is so important because each one of those interpretations is also likewise informed vis-a-vis the ether communications, and therefore uses its interpretation of intuition to inform its desire to live life in accordance with its view. So merging medias, again, is figuring out how to merge those ether communications into a form of communication skill. We're humans. We use language to communicate. That's why we're so on about how to define and describe and discern the quality, the texture, the type of ether communications that make up our intuitional knowing, so that that can be used to craft literally the physical material understanding of those individualized interpretations can actually be synthesized, crafted together, molded together into a unified perspective that we can say we're merging these medias into this mind that understands where that media needs to be applied so that we can develop it into the type of lives that we want, instead of allowing that media to take over our lives and then be simply reflective tools for their messages, which is what everybody on this station and most people in the world are aware of. It's the machine and their messages that are destroying our lives, that are controlling our lives, that are the result of this chaos and complexity in the world today.
So, but I mean, you know, yes. But we are allowing it to exist. And so it's the language of how that experience either denigrates us or propels us to be more than we can be.
We really literally have to evolutionize our language skills to more fully reflect our merged media, mm-hmm. our minds. We actually have the capacity to literally translate the media that we experience into a meaningful state of mind that delivers the quality of life we're looking for. How do we use, therefore, the fundamentals of our being, the fundamentals of our intention? Remember, everything about life is love. Everything we do is based on love. Every single component of our process and motivation is comprised of love. And so media is love. And if we conceive of our engagement with ourselves based on that fundamental understanding, then we will choose the media components that are focused on those qualities of love that we want to participate in. It's all very interesting.
I mean, no matter how complex things may seem, when you break it down to the basic idea of love and how love is the ether communication, because that's what I think.
Well, it would
argue. It's pure goodness. It's pure love, And that's as simple as it need be. That is your life raft. That is, you know, when you feel like you're drowning, that's a little rock that you can just grab a hold of that turns into a huge ocean when you embrace love.
Literally.
It simplifies everything immediately.
Well, it gives you the kind of texture to know that your life is being lived for you.
Exactly.
And what we really, really would love to see you do is to find a way to use love as the basic thread that binds your life. The very nature of your experience, the very nature of your desire, the very nature of your process, really can and should be about love. And the more we make it about love, the more we focus on love as the currency of our lives. That enables us to translate, transmute, and transform the currency of our times as media, literally. We can literally turn media into the currency of love. And actually look at our experiences with media as expressions of sharing love with each other. We're in control of the media. We're in control of our minds. Let's merge them in a way that matters for all of us. Please, go out today. Go out tomorrow. Go out every single day and try to reach outside yourself just in some simple form, in some simple way. And when you experience media in some way that causes you to feel overwhelmed or overloaded, make sure that you instead translate that into an opportunity to tell someone, anyone, that you love them. Reach out and tell someone you've never said it to before, I love you. And see what that can do to change the dynamic of how you engage with the medium maelstrom that is making up our lives today. And how we ourselves can be in charge of being aware of what love can deliver. So
thank you very much.
And we look forward to sharing more with you next week. And we will experience love ourselves in ways that we can share with you. And ways that we hope will inspire you to go out again and spread more love. All right, then. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week, and we'll see you in the ether.
See you in the ether.
So, Don, back to you.
Thank you for joining us, Be Aware people, here at Be Aware Nation, where being aware is a state to put your mind in. So come visit us at BeAwareNation.com. Until we can continue our conversation next Sunday at 5 p.m. here on BBS Radio Channel 1, where we'll look forward to finding out what you're doing to merge medias into your mind in a way that matters. Remember, life affirms what you believe, so don't believe everything you think. Into it, your way home. See you in the ether.